Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is the one, 95.1 FM. And for over 50 years serving the Northfield area, KYMN 1080 on your AM dial. That was a pretty interesting interview, and congratulations to Donna Paulson. She just got off the air with Paula. And she's going to be recognized Monday night at 50 North. What a great name, by the way, that is. And when I tuned in, I said, wow, that voice sounds familiar. And, of course, Donna was the pianist in all the plays that I had the opportunity to play in. She suggested that sometimes as an accompanist, they have to, you know, allow the singer to be louder and hear so the audience can hear the words, she said, but sometimes they go off track, and I have to get them back. And I remember an incident that happened. Well, a couple of them, and it was always kind of funny, because she'd be looking at me like, you know, when you missed a whole chorus here or whatever. Well, I'm really happy to say I got a good man in studio right now, and that would be Captain Randy Knox of the CAP, but a former Air Force gentleman, and served our country during the Vietnam War. And my first question is this, and you're going to say, what is that? That's a dumb question. Here it is. Tell me about the boots you're wearing.
The boots I'm wearing?
Yeah, they're really cool.
Well... Well, they're official CAP boots. We try to train our cadets to polish them, mm-hmm. get a nice shine. So I try to I try to present an example for them. So I worked on these boots a little bit to get them shined up. So
I remember when I was a cadet in high school. For a short time, and one of the things was polished brass, polished shoes. I mean, that's what you did. And I used two fingers, and we'd burn the polish, and then we would just rub that into that thing till it looked like patent leather.
Yep.
It was a lot of work.
Yep, it's called a spit shine.
Yep. Yeah. Well, the last time you were here, Randy Knox, we had an opportunity to learn about you. You're from Alpena, South Dakota. I believe I pronounced that correctly.
Yep, you did.
And you played for Washington High School, the Washington Warriors. Am I right on that?
Well, I didn't play for them particularly, but that was the name of our athletic team.
Well, weren't you, but you were like the manager, weren't you?
No, you must be thinking of somebody else.
Oh, I thought you were a manager of the basketball team or football team. Okay.
No, I was a fan.
A fan, all right.
Probably about as and, far as I went.
We talked about your growing up and ultimately ending up serving in Vietnam. And then you came sick. I think we left there, didn't we, in our interview?
Yep.
Okay. So just to kind of back up a little bit, what type of rank and service did you have in Vietnam?
When I was in Vietnam, I was an enlisted member, so I would have been an E-2 when I...
E-2?
E-2 when
That's
I...
That's as low as you can go almost, isn't it? I mean, is that what you get when you enter and go through boot camp?
Well, you enter as an E-1.
E-1,
yep.
Okay.
And then when you graduate from basic training, you become an E-2, and I guess now that I think about it, I was actually an E-3 when I got to Vietnam, and then I was promoted to E-4 while I was in Vietnam. And then when I got back to the States, or I should back up, while I was in Vietnam, I applied to go to officer training school, and I was accepted. So about as shortly after I got stateside, then back from Vietnam, I went to OTS and was commissioned and served an additional 5 years then after I returned from Vietnam.
Okay. And did you gain the rank of first lieutenant?
Captain.
Captain?
Yeah.
Ooh,
which is the reason I got captain bars on my Civil Air Patrol uniform. Civil Air Patrol is kind enough to allow prior service members to assume the same rank, same grade that they had when they were active duty military. So I was a captain 45 years ago, and I'm a captain again today.
And what really amazes me is you are wearing the uniform today, the same uniform you wore as a captain in the Army.
Well, Air Force.
Air Force. I apologize. Oh, what a sin. I'm sorry. I mean that.
Well,
Air Force. Air Force blue.
Yeah, it's not exactly the same uniform I had. That uniform that I had 40 years ago is long gone. But this is the official Air Force uniform. And if I had my original uniform, I would be able to fit into it.
Wow,
so.
That's pretty accomplished. You know, there's a guy in town that I had on the air when I first started doing this show 13, 14 years ago, and he was a collector of military items and stories. I'm sorry, I'm not going to remember his name, but I, too, have the same interest in the ribbons that you're wearing. And can you tell me about them? What do they call that when you have all scramble? No, that'd be a general or something, but what do they call it when you have all those medals on your chest?
Yeah, fruit salad.
Fruit salad, thank you. So what are some of the things, fruit salad, because they just interest me.
Well, again, for those that are prior service, the Civil Air Patrol allows any medals or ribbons that you earned while you were in active duty military. You're allowed to wear those on your Civil Air Patrol uniform. So the ones on the top here, the top, I don't know, three, four rows, five rows, whatever it is, those are all Air Force ribbons. And as a matter of fact, they're the actual ribbons that I wore in my uniform when I was in active duty military. So, and then the bottom two rows or so, those are Civil Air Patrol ribbons that I've earned since I've been in Civil Air Patrol. So some of the Air Force ribbons, let's see, this top one, if I can look down here, that would be an Air Force Commendation Medal. So I got, there's an oak leaf cluster on it, so this means I've earned a couple of them.
Is that first because that's the one you're most proud of?
No, there is a precedence the way that we are wear ribbons. So
okay.
You wear the most, I guess you'd say the most prestigious one goes on the top, so in my case, it's an Air Force Commendation Medal, so I'd earned a couple of those for actions in Vietnam. Let's see. Next one down would be Outstanding Unit Award, I think, with a Combat V. Let's see. What's the next one?
The pale blue one with the red and dark blue stripes.
I think that's an enlisted good conduct medal, if I'm not mistaken.
How about that gold one with the four stars on it?
Yeah, that's the Vietnam Service Medal.
Okay.
So you oftentimes see that on Vietnam veterans. They might have that on their cap or something like that.
Well, I'll have to remember that. Okay.
And then the four stars indicate you get a star for every 90 days in a combat zone.
Okay.
So I was over there for a year, so it's four 90-day segments. Let's see, what else have I got? Oh, let's see. Small arms qualification ribbon, longevity ribbon, a few other miscellaneous ribbons.
Yeah. Now, if you wore that uniform in, let's say, the airport, and some enlisted Air Force men, E-2s, E-3s, happened to be going through in uniform, would they, out of courtesy, salute you?
Well, indoors, normally you do not salute unless
okay.
you're formally reporting to
okay.
an officer.
You got them. You see them in the parking lot.
They might. They certainly have no obligation to salute.
Okay.
We are civilians. We're not the Air Force. The uniform that I'm wearing, the Civil Air Patrol uniform, does differ slightly in appearance from the Air Force. So if they're reasonably observant, they would notice that it's not quite the Air Force uniform. And
okay, especially the CAP on the...
Right, yeah.
Epaulettes, is that what they're called? Epaulettes?
Epaulette sleeves.
Epaulettes, yeah, okay.
Yep. So if they were to salute, I would return the salute. It's common courtesy, but... normally, when I'm out wearing this uniform out kind of in a civilian setting, I normally get mistaken for an airline pilot more often than a military officer.
Okay. So. At 12 minutes after 10 o'clock this morning, we have Captain Randy Knox with us. He's the captain of the CAP here, the Civil Air Patrol. And last time we were in, we learned that he has some children that are... when I look at you and you have a 45-year-old daughter, that surprises me. You know, you got a full head of hair, no beer belly, and looking good and sharp. There's Diane and Sally and Abby and Mika, and all those kids are out and about growing up. Well, you have one that's pretty young, 15 years old. So when you got back from Vietnam, did we cover what you did after Vietnam?
Well, when I got back, I was still in the military. I was assigned to a missile base in Montana, and I served there for 3.5 years, and then another missile base in California. My two daughters were born then. One was born in Montana, Great Falls, Montana, and the other one in a military hospital in Vandenberg Air Force Base, California. And then the Vietnam War ended, and the military was downsizing. I had fulfilled my military obligations, so I went ahead and requested a release from extended active duty and was granted that. Went back into civilian life. Went to work for a computer company that was actually subcontracting to the Air Force, so I basically took off my uniform and put on civilian clothes and went down the street about 2 or 3 miles and went to work for a computer company.
In what town?
That was in that was at Vandenberg Air Force Base, California.
Okay. All right.
And then we moved back to the Midwest. I was originally from South Dakota, so we moved back. In those days, there weren't too many computer jobs in South Dakota, so I came back to the Twin Cities and worked for Control Data Corporation then in Twin Cities for 17 years.
And did you buy stock when you first started and then sell it later on with a big smile?
Well, yeah, I was issued some stock options as part of my compensation package while I was with Control Data. Yeah, so that was part of my compensation.
Were you a hands-on hardware guy, or were you a programmer, or what responsibilities did you have at Control Data?
Yeah, I was a project manager, what was called an engineering project manager. So I managed teams that were building hardware and software products. I was part of the government systems group, so we were building computers primarily for aircraft, for shipboard operations, for spacecraft. So some of the, probably the most famous product that I was involved with flew on the Joint Stars aircraft, which is a battlefield airborne command post. So we had a number of computers on that aircraft, and I was the project manager on that build.
Now, it's not unusual from somebody that served in any of the places, Air Force, Navy, Marines, Army, to connect with civil projects because of their experience in the service and connections?
Yeah, the civilian companies generally do like to, particularly those that have military contracts, do like to hire ex-military. Some of the more senior officers would have some connections from their service. I was a more junior officer, a captain, so I didn't have any high-level contacts. But being in the military, you're pretty familiar with how things work in the military, and you're able to converse pretty easily with military officers, procurement officials. So it's a good transition.
One of the things that I don't like when I'm doing an interview and people say, like I said before, or last time I told you, the reason I there are people that didn't hear our first interview.
Right.
So I'm going to be repetitive in some of my questions so people get to know a little bit more about you, all right? Now, did I ask you if you ever knew Jeff Bakken?
No, I don't think that's a name that I recognize.
Okay. He was a guy that was a brilliant man when it comes to the field that you were in. A rocket scientist is what he was, or is, or was. How about Bruce Moreland? We talked about Bruce.
Yeah, I've exchanged some emails with Bruce. He's part of the Rotary Club here in town, I believe, and I'll be going into the Rotary Club next, I think next Thursday I'm speaking at their noon luncheon.
Good, up at the Methodist Church.
Right, Methodist Church.
On Thursday at noon.
I think so.
Yeah, I know so.
Oh, you do? Okay, all right.
Well, anyhow, Bruce Moreland told me the story about working in the silos, mm-hmm. and you worked in the silos?
Yeah, I think Bruce was a launch officer, and I was a maintenance officer on the Minuteman Intercontinental Ballistic Missile System.
Did you ever have to go down inside and stay there overnight or anything like that?
Well, I for the first 2.5 years or so that I was a maintenance officer, every tour that I pulled was out on a missile site. Mm-hmm. We were doing maintenance on the missile. Typically, you would not stay overnight in a missile launch facility. If the maintenance took longer than you were able to get back to base, we had to get back to base within a 16-hour period from when we started. Then we would go to a launch control facility where they had bunks and overnight facilities, and we'd stay overnight there.
Yeah. Now, there was one in Farmington years ago.
Yeah, those were defensive.
Nike?
Yeah, I think they were Nike defensive missile systems. Yeah, the Minuteman is a strategic offensive weapon.
And then you being from South Dakota, I think there were a whole bunch of missile pits or whatever you call them in North and South Dakota, weren't there?
Yes, there were. There were 150 Minuteman missiles around Ellsworth Air Force Base.
Wow.
At the height, when I was serving, there were 1,000 Minuteman missiles at 6 different bases in the northern tier of states. Now they're down to 450.
What do they do to replace them? Is there something bigger and better and quicker?
The Minuteman remains the only strategic land-based missile, and they just generally kind of keep upgrading them. So the Minuteman system that I worked on, they had just transitioned from what they called the Minuteman 1 to the Minuteman 2, and they now have the Minuteman 3 version. So it's kind of like the old B-52 bombers where they just kind of keep upgrading them.
Did you ever, being an Air Force guy, did you ever study the story about the B-29s towards the end of the Second World War?
Well, I have some familiarity with B-29s. I've got an uncle that flew as a navigator in the Pacific on B-29s, so he and I have talked a bit.
Would you fly in one? Well, maybe today, but back then they were producing thousands of them. And, of course, they were very important in the Pacific front, and some of them didn't make it back because of they weren't built 100% reliable in the history of the Air Force, Army Air Corps at that time.
Well, I'm sure that's true. In talking to my uncle, he came off of B-24s in the European theater and moved into B-29s, and he thought that was quite a step up.
Yeah, it was, except they built them so fast that some of them didn't work 100%.
Yeah.
22 minutes after 10 o'clock at a moment to talk about the QB, the Quarterback Club on Highway 3 and 3rd Street in Northfield. Quarterback Club is open right now. Breakfast has been served, so now they're concentrating on your lunch and your dinner. Whether it, today's Friday, they have fish sandwiches and they have fish dinners, delicious cod over at the Quarterback Club. And, of course, they have the best French fries in town, and the serving is just swell, as my late mother-in-law would say. And in addition to that, we always recommend their burgers. They're flame-broiled. Nobody else in town does that. And if you're in a hurry, you can call ahead and order a big bucket of chicken, and when you get there, they'll have it ready for you to go. When you get it home, it will still be hot and juicy. Everybody loves their roasted chicken. The Quarterback Club, remember, is locally owned and locally managed. As a matter of fact, the morning management people and servers and food preparers have been there for over 40 years. Great town.
The genuine enthusiasm for helping people get fit is palpable at CrossFit Scopos in Dundas. Every coach brings their expertise along with their desire to help you be the best you can be. This is Terry Knight, and I've worked out in a lot of gyms and on my own, but the atmosphere provided at CrossFit Scopos in Dundas is nothing like I've ever experienced. I'm challenged and lifted up. I hope you'll take a moment to check them out and let Scopos help you change your life. Go to CrossFitScopos.com.
Hi, welcome to this Subway ad for 5 foot long starting at $4.99 each. How do you want it?
Secret DJ set.
At a retirement home?
Weird, I like it.
DJ sandwich in the house.
What'd he say?
Cold cut combo $4.99.
Gold butt mambo.
Meatball marinara $4.99.
How much?
$4.99. Subway, make it what you want.
Limited time only at participating restaurants. Prices and subs included may vary. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
25 minutes after 10 o'clock on this Friday. Today is January 25th, and the year is 2019. And my guest this morning is Captain Randy Knox, and we're chit-chatting about his life. He worked for Control Data for 14 or 15 years. Where'd you go immediately after that?
Yeah,
Whoops, I better turn your mic on. There we go.
Okay, are we on?
Yeah.
All right. So I worked for Control Data Corporation for 17 years.
17, okay.
Yep, and then I went out on my own for a while, and for the remainder of my career, then I was an independent information technology consultant, manager. So I worked for a number of large companies in the Minneapolis area.
So you would go in and check out their computer system and make upgrades and tell them how things went wrong and you fixed it?
Well, generally, they would have a project that they wanted done. They might want to upgrade a system or install a new system or something like that. And because it would be a short-term project, and short-term might mean anywhere from 6 months to 18 months or even longer than that, depending on how long it was. So what they would do is contract with a project manager, bring them in, assemble a technical team around them, then we would manage the project, get it operational, and then they could release that project manager.
So you were right at the beginning of computers. Now, how big would the computer have been? Would it have been as big as this room back then?
Well, if you go back, my first introduction to computers was actually when I was in college, would have been around 1966. Most computers that were operational on college campuses in those days would have filled a room probably 4 or 5 rooms this size.
Wow. Air conditioned?
They drew a lot of power, so they dissipated a lot of heat. And compute power those days, your laptop computer these days is probably 50 times as powerful as those were.
So, amazing.
Yeah, it sure is.
And you got to see all of that development.
I did. Quite a ride.
Yeah, and I suppose you introduced some of your clients into, well, look at this thing is 6 feet by 8 feet. I have one that's 2 feet by 4 feet.
Yeah. Yeah, and when I was with Control Data Corporation, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, we were building computers primarily for aircraft, for shipboard, for spacecraft.
Okay.
So when you're on those types of platforms, not you're up in the air or you're out on the ocean or in space. Space, that is size, weight, and power are all very important parameters, particularly on spacecraft, because it has to be small. It has to be draw as little power as possible, and it has to be reliable because you can't go up and just fix it.
How did they? This always says they say that the phone that you have in your pocket right now, an iPhone, let's say, has more computer power than the spacecraft did back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And I'm wondering, how did the people operate satellites and spacecraft from the ground? Was it a radio signal? How did they get the information they wanted to send to the spacecraft to tell it to go a little 4 degrees this way or that way? How did they communicate with them?
Yeah, it would have been through radio signals, essentially.
Would it have been analog, or would it have been FM, or would it be a frequency none of us know about? Not that it's a top secret, but don't tune into or anything like that?
I don't know about frequencies, but I think it would have been primarily digital, even in those days.
Okay.
So
type it into the computer and hit send, and it'd go up to the...
Yeah, something like that. Probably not quite that simple, but you got the concept anyway.
Did you ever get to go to a launch?
I never got actually to a physical launch, for example, at the Cape or at on a system that I had a computer or a piece of. When I was at Vandenberg Air Force Base, when I was still in the military, there were a lot of test launches from Vandenberg, so I got to see a number of those. So those are quite exciting, thrilling to watch. And then when you build a spacecraft, a computer, or at least a part of it, and it actually gets to launch, it feels pretty good. I mean, that's a kind of a part of you in a way that's going into space.
I had the pleasure of going to a space launch right here in the Twin Cities. Stan Hubbard, who owns KSTP radio, television, and other things, built his own rocket. And I think he called his company USSB, if I remember correctly. And he was sending it up, a satellite, from France.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had telecommunications, and he invited a lot of people to come and observe the launch live television mm-hmm. from France. And you talked about tense. I mean, that you must have experienced that, too, yourself many times, because you the 10, 9, 8, and then it's off, and you go, oh, boy, don't... Yeah. Did you experience that?
It's kind of a tense moment, and then it gets up there, and of course from the spacecraft point of view, you're not really sure if it's successful until sometime later when they power it on and they start getting telemetry back from it. And usually with a spacecraft, it may take anywhere from 10 to 30 days for them to go through a complete initial check once it's on orbit. So you're kind of on pins and needles for an extended period of time until everything's finally operational and it's working. And then you can kind of sit back and relax a little bit.
When you were talking about the missile stages 1, 2, and 3, mm-hmm. 3 replacing 2, 2 replacing 1, what did they do with the old ones? There must have been a ton of gold in those things.
Well, it's only been recently where there's been any kind of recovery efforts. It started with the space shuttle when the two solid propellant boosters on either side of the space shuttle, they'd recover those and reuse them. And then more recently, the the Falcon reusable rockets, other than, but prior to that and others, when the first stage burns up, it just is gone, basically. Second stage, likewise.
Well, I was thinking, so now we're in South Dakota, and we're in one of those, what do you call them, pits, holes?
Silos,
thank you. So now you have this rocket in there, and it has the booster, and it has the computer on it to tell it where to go, and then it has the explosive in the front of it. I don't know. I'm assuming that. So now you replace it with number two. What happens to that whole physical unit? Do they keep the booster and put it on two with more modern abilities? Or how do they get rid of the stuff that they aren't going to use anymore? Must be a wonderful recycling job.
Okay, so there's several answers to that.
Okay.
I'm not sure I can give you the complete answer, but first of all, the Minuteman weapon system has been around since 1962. So one of the questions one has to ask is it reliable? So what happens is about four, five, six times a year, they will pull a missile at random. I presume they still do this. This is what they were doing when I was in. They'll pull a missile at random out of one of the missile fields, take it down to Vandenberg, install it in a silo down there, and then launch it and see if it still works. So that's kind of how they test reliability. They just sample continuously. And to my knowledge, we never had a failure while I was in the service. They all worked virtually flawlessly. So I think probably for the most part, the first stage probably is still intact. Or if they take them back, they'll take them back to the vendor and they'll recycle what they can. The second and third stages, oftentimes get upgraded. And again, the old ones go back to the vendor and are reused.
So when they launch them, they're launching them in the ocean, and they have a parachute on the detonation part of it?
No. So the test launches are going out of silos near the coast at Vandenberg Air Force Base.
Uh-huh.
They're going into Kwajalein Atoll, which is about 5,000 miles away in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Minuteman will reach an apogee of about 700 miles, and then it will ballistically come down. And the reentry vehicle, which is, if it's an operational system, that would have the weapon in it. When it's launched into the Pacific, it'll have some instrumentation in that reentry vehicle.
Apogee, will you explain that?
Yeah, the peak of the trajectory.
Okay. 700 miles.
700 miles into space.
Okay.
Yeah.
Straight up, 700 miles?
No, it won't be straight up.
It gets as high as 700
yeah.
miles? Holy
so
moly.
It'd be a parabolic orbit or a parabolic trajectory. So it'll go up and then it'll come down into the target area in the Pacific.
Do you know if they weren't? Oh, go ahead.
And it'll come in real fast. There's no parachute on it. It'll just
plunk.
Come in at many thousands of miles per hour, just like a real weapon would in war.
Do they inform other nations that this is a test? This is only a test.
The answer is yes. I mean, anytime there's a launch out of Vandenberg, there'll be a NOTAM will go out, so everybody knows that there'll be a launch. Stuff coming out of Vandenberg, particularly the missile tests, happen on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
Any of our adversaries would know,
okay,
when it's happening and where it's going.
And
so there's no chance of a in
a war
of a incorrectly assumed launch of an enemy missile, right?
And, of course, it's not near any populated area.
No, as a matter of fact, if the missile were to go off course and look like it would encroach on a populated area, there is explosive the ability to detonate the missile and destroy it before it goes into a population area.
That's all very interesting. By the way, speaking about interesting, I was talking about the quarterback club, and Dale Finger owns it, and
yep.
He bought it from Larry Benjamin.
Yes, he did.
Who owned it. And when I think of Benjamin now, I think of Benjamin Buss, and John is the big wig now. He used to play softball together on the quarterback team. And you're connected somehow to Benjamin Buss, aren't you?
Yes, I am. So after my career in the military and a controlled data, and then as an independent computer contractor, I retired 6 years ago, and I got a job working as a bus driver for Benjamin Buss. And in some respects, it's probably the best job I've ever had.
Well, how did you learn about the possibility of becoming a bus driver?
My brother, who is 2 years, retired 2 years before I did, lives down in Iowa, got a job as a bus driver, school bus driver. And when I got ready to retire, he said, you're going to have to find something to do. And he said, driving a school bus is not a bad job. I drive for 2 hours in the morning. I got the middle part of my day free. I drive another hour and 45 minutes in the afternoon. I got my nights, my weekends free for my own projects. He says, not a bad job. So at any rate, he's right. Not a bad job. In fact, it's a darn good job. So if anybody that's in a situation like myself where you're looking for something to do at a post-retirement situation...
So after his recommendation, did you say, where were you living at the time?
Here, I was living here in Northfield.
We'll get to how you got to Northfield, but so you could apply locally, and then you had to go out and get a license?
Yep.
Is that hard?
No, I wouldn't say it's hard. You do need to take a Class B commercial license with a passenger endorsement and a school bus endorsement. So you have to take several tests and on the road test. Benjamin Buss does have on-site training and evaluators, so I didn't have to go anywhere. They provide good training.
For the first thing they do, I would imagine, is have you submit to information about your driving history as an individual over the course of your lifetime, so they can avoid hiring people with reckless driving and careless driving and drunk driving and all that on their records. They certainly wouldn't entertain hiring those people, I assume.
That's correct. My experience with Benjamin Buss is they do a real good job of screening and hiring and training. I work with a group of very professional drivers, first class people.
I don't know why. I can't remember why, but one year I went to the Grand Event Center because something was going on that I was going to attend. And I walk in and look around and don't see, you know, some familiar faces, and John Benjamin came walking out of the theater section into the lobby area, and he waved hi, and I said, well, hey, John, how you doing? I says, what's going on here? He says, well, it's our Benjamin Buss Christmas party.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, man, I'm sorry, you got the wrong date here. Yeah, if you want to stick around, go ahead, you're welcome. I thought that was pretty nice. I did not stick around, though. And I thought that was so nice. He's a good guy.
He sure is. I mentioned earlier, you know, in some ways this is the best job I ever had. And part of the reason is, you know, John and Wanda just run a great company.
Yeah.
Very nice, very, very personable, just real decent people to work for. So, as, you know, as all of the staff, Jenna Dardup, Dardis, who's manager of the operation here in Northfield, school bus operation. Just great, great people.
Pam Williams.
Yep, yep. She's still around. She's. I don't see too much of her anymore. She's working pretty much out of the Egan office. Mm. But yep.
Well, another thing is that when the Minneapolis Aquatennials entertains 56 young women who were vying for the title of Miss Aquatennial and looking for scholarship dollars, they're transported that week by Northfield bus lines,
mm-hmm.
the big, beautiful buses. And after the event is over with, the buses are there to pick up the women. And I talk to the drivers because I go up. My wife is involved in these programs. And I talk to the bus drivers, and they're not from Northfield. They're from the city somewhere. And I say, well, John is a neighbor of mine. Oh, really? And, you know, we had a nice chit-chat. So, and it all started with a guy named Chubb Grissom. Yep. Ever meet Chubb?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Quite a guy, Kenneth.
Yep.
It's 18 minutes before 11 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN. A friend you can count on. Something important is happening. Listen to this.
The Northfield Area Chamber of Commerce would like to congratulate Aurora Pharmaceutical, this year's Business of the Year, Chris Canelli, winner of Business Person of the Year, and Lynn Ziegler, the Chamber Ambassador of the Year. All three awards are very well deserved, and we thank you for all you do for the Northfield community. If you would like to offer your congratulations in person, tickets are still available for the Business Recognition Banquet on Thursday, January 31st from 5 to 9 at the Grand Event Center. Go to northfieldchamber.com for more information and to reserve your seats today.
Oh, boy, that brings back memories. KYMN Radio, Jeff Johnson and Terry Knight had the honor of being the Business of the Year a couple of years ago, and I had the honor of being the Ambassador of the Year back when it was first started in the 70s. So here we are talking to Randy Knox, captain of the Civil Air Patrol, and I was anticipating some film people were going to be coming in at the last minute here to promote whatever the item was, but then I understand you're going to be showing them around the Northfield Historical Society.
Yeah, as far as I know, I'm, Kathy Osterman contacted me yesterday and asked if I could do a tour through the, or give a tour through the historic bank for a group of German tourists. And I said, sure, I can do it after I get off Wayne's radio show. Yeah.
Are you part of the Historical
yeah.
Society?
Yeah, I volunteered down there for several years, and I do sit on the board, but probably my favorite activity is to give tours through the bank. So I dress up tried to dress up as the character of Anselm Manning, who was one of the proprietor of one of the hardware stores in 1876, and so I talk a little bit about his part in the.
My favorite part was robbing the bank.
Oh, it was one of the James Younger gang.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever been inside during a raid reenactment?
Yes, I have. So
I can remember going in on a very hot day, and I played the role of Frank James, and go in there, and that air conditioning felt so good. And we'd laugh and talk with each other, and
right.
Pretty soon, well, it's time to go kill somebody.
Yep, yeah.
I know it sounds terrible, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
At 14 before 11 o'clock, how did you end up in Northfield, Minnesota in the first place?
Well, as I mentioned, I moved from California back to the Twin Cities, and I worked for a number of years for Control Data Corporation.
Yeah.
I lived in Burnsville.
Mm-hmm.
Then both my daughters graduated from Burnsville High School. And then I met my current wife in Burnsville, and she lived here in Northfield. Charlene, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up getting married and moving to Northfield, and gosh, what a great town, huh?
Well, how did you discover it? And, you know, I mean, it's further from the city. Did Charlene have a connection to Northfield?
We met at a cooking party up in Burnsville,
mm-hmm.
and struck up a conversation and relationship. And
who was doing the cooking?
I guess we were both doing a cooking. It was.
It sounds like a lot of fun. What did you prepare?
I don't remember.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe you had a special thing that you prepared and you were showing it off at this cook-off or whatever. How about Charlene? Did she have a special that you enjoyed? Or?
Well, I don't remember what she fixed that night, but she's a pretty good cook. She fixed up a real nice shepherd's pie here the other night from scratch and did a real good job.
Yeah, that's a...
Vector's plenty of leftovers, so I get to enjoy it in multiple days.
Last night I took a chicken breast and I stuffed it with cheese, and then I wrapped it in bacon, and then I baked it.
Yeah?
It was really good.
I'll bet it was. Yeah.
So you met Charlene at a cooking show or whatever it was.
Yeah, and, cooking party. And
so my question then is, I really like detail on this because it's just interesting. So where were you living at that time? She was living in Burnsville. You were living in Burnsville?
No, I was living in Burnsville. She lived here in Northfield.
Oh, okay. That's the connection.
Yeah, she's been down here for a number of years. She taught school in the Faribault School District for a while, and lived here in Northfield, but taught in Faribault. And then she was working in the music department at St. Olaf. Her undergraduate degree is in music.
Okay.
So she had worked in the music department, and in fact worked there for a while after we were married.
So when Paula Gramquist guest this morning. Donna Paulson mm-hmm. Came out of the studio and out to the green room. You must have known her because
yep.
your wife would have probably worked with her, or at least in the same college, St. Olaf.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, we've been over the years to a number of functions where Donna's been there. And yep.
Well, what is your favorite thing about Northfield?
Wow, what's my favorite thing about Northfield? Well, it's just a very nice, friendly city, I guess. A lot of things going on, particularly with the two colleges. In fact, I was checking my calendar this morning, and I see my wife has put down an entry. I think this must be the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra is coming to one of the colleges, so we're going to go partake of that.
Are you a music lover?
Oh, yeah, I like music. Yeah.
Have you been trained in music in any way? Do you play an instrument?
Well, I played the trumpet in high school band for a year or two, but that's about as far as it went.
But you enjoy all kinds of music?
No, I wouldn't say all kinds.
Well, you don't like... What, country, rap, pop?
Oh, I probably I like classical music. I have been known to tune in a radio station with big band sounds.
Yeah,
or,
they sold that one.
Or
as a matter of fact, they sold the classical and the big band sound in the last decade, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So who's your favorite arranger, Mozart, or I'm looking for that word, not conductor, but the people that write that music.
Yeah, composer.
Composer, thank you. I'll tell you.
Oh, I don't know if I got a favorite. Any of the big names. Or
Rachmaninoff? Or,
mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
So you play that on 33s at home, or do you go?
No. These days, you can get online and you can stream it.
That's
down,
true.
So
you can get anything online.
Yes,
unbelievable.
Yes, that's right. So
I was wondering if you had any hobbies besides CAP, woodworking, or
I have been known to do some woodworking in the past. The last 3-4 years with my grandson, who's now coming up on, is he 15, 16? He's coming up on 15 years old. He and I have engaged in some computer projects in the last few summers. So one of the hobbies is working with microprocessors and Speaking of, we had talked a little bit earlier about computers and how much they've evolved over the last 30 or 40 years. You can buy a microprocessor these days for less than $15 that will just do an enormous amount of... some amazing things. And so my grandson and I get some of those, and we wire up components and build robots and do things like that.
A little soldering involved?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Ever burn yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, were you around? Obviously you were. Did you ever play Pong?
Yes. Yeah, that Pong would have been one of the really early computer games.
Yeah, I think it would have been in the early 80s or late 70s.
Yeah, let's see. Let me think back. I think the first PCs that started to kind of get into the public commercial or the
games
consumer market would have been... Yeah, it would have been probably the late 70s.
Well, I remember playing Pong, and that was really a big deal to be able to do that. And now today, it's unbelievable. The games at Monster Games, you heard of them?
Yes.
Okay, they used to be upstairs here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where their company is now, but our local guy makes a lot of games. And I went up there one time by his invitation. He's from St. Paul, so you know, you get a tight relationship when you know something about somebody. And it was dark, and individuals were in their own little area, not split, but at their own table or workbench or whatever you call it, and wearing earphones doing their work. And I'm going, what are they doing? You know, and I can't figure it out to this day. How you write a program.
Yep. Yep, they can get pretty engrossed in that. You know, speaking of computer games and engrossing, Civil Air Patrol, we just, out at Stanton, we just received two flight simulators out there that the cadets really like. I mean, it's actually an aircraft yoke and a pedalus and there's computer software that goes with it. It allows them to practice real flight dynamics and controls.
Yep.
But it's, it's kind of like a very sophisticated video game to them. They really like it. We'll be demonstrating those at our open house coming up on the 5th of February.
Okay.
Yeah, 5th of February.
Well, remind me of that so I can.
Yeah.
Are they doing a Cessna, a 182, a Piper?
The software has a number of aircraft.
Oh.
So you can kind of select your aircraft that you want to fly. And
do you do it internally? Is it closed in with
it's,
a video screen, or is it just open?
Yeah, it's just set up for... For right now, we'll just have a regular laptop display. The bigger display you get, the more realistic it kind of looks. But even with a laptop, my experience with the cadets is they get a real thrill out of that. They like flying the airplane, and
that
a lot.
I crashed a 747 in Hong Kong, San Francisco, and the Twin Cities. Pull up! Pull up.
Yeah.
A fellow in town here unfortunately has passed away, but he was the guy that ran the 747 simulator up at Twin Cities Airport. We have one more break, and we'll come back and wrap up Right after this, our guest this morning is Captain Randy Knox.
Monster Energy AMA Supercross and FIM World Championship. Witness an exhilarating sports story written in real time. A grueling battle of athleticism and determination that demands a lifetime of training to win, but only takes seconds to lose. Get your tickets today to see the world's best dirt bike riders race for the world's biggest title in your hometown. Tickets start at $15. Restrictions and additional charges may apply. Coming to U.S. Bank Stadium February 9th. Visit supercrosslive.com.
Hi, I'm Kathy Olson. Navigating the unfamiliar land of senior care can be daunting. We're here for you. Millstrom Commons offers the care and services you need and the independence you want. Renting one of our assisted living apartments provides you with 3 meals a day, served restaurant style in our dining room, weekly housekeeping, and the option of adding personal supportive services as you need them. Our staff's on duty 24/7 to provide that much needed peace of mind. If you're searching for options, give me a call. I'm here for you.
I'm back on KYMN Radio, the Wayne Eddy Affair. Captain Randy Knox is my guest here this morning, and he is with the CAP, and they have a big deal coming up in February. I'll be happy to remind folks, but I do have a question in regards to your kids, Diane and Sally and Abby and Mika, correct?
Micah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are they any of them living in Northfield?
No, my two daughters, one lives in Cottage Grove, and the other lives out in Seattle.
Seattle,
yep. Okay. And then the daughter that lives in Seattle has one child that's Ian. He's my grandson. He would be...
Nine,
yeah. Yep. He could be 10 coming up in May. And then my younger daughter lives in Cottage Grove, and then Abigail and Micah are my grandchildren. Let's see, Abigail must be getting pretty close to 20. Is that right? Yeah, Abigail's coming up on 20, and Micah's coming up on 15.
So. All right. Did you get a chance to have them all together at during the holidays?
My Abigail and Micah were down over Christmas. Ian, let's see, he was here last summer. I guess we were all... Yeah, we were all together last summer.
Good. So. By the way, do you get a discount on airline tickets, CAP?
No, I don't think we do.
Oh, well, that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
I suppose.
Okay. So from here you're going to the Northfield Historical Society.
Yep, I got my costume in the car, so I'll go down there and change.
And
get ready to get through the bank.
And you're on their board of directors.
Yep.
And how are things going? What's the biggest plan you got going for the Historical Society right now?
Well, we've got some events coming up. We've got the annual meeting coming up. We've got the Grapes, Hops, and History. I don't recall the exact date.
Yeah.
I think it's either late March, early April.
Okay.
Kathy Osterman, who's the director of the Northfield Historical Society, will be getting some publicity out on that. So those are a couple of big events coming up.
Well,
winter is a little bit of a kind of a doldrums as far as tourist in Northfield, so it's kind of a slow time of the year, but usually about the 1st of April it starts to pick up. And
well, I stopped in on several occasions and picked up the book that the kids put together.
Yep.
Eden something.
Yep, Eden on the Canon.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been a great seller here since that came out. Yeah.
I bought some for Christmas, and then a fella had a birthday last weekend, and I bought that for him. He was a townie all his life. It's 11 o'clock. We have to call it a day, Randy, and I want to thank you very much for coming in.
Well, thanks, Wayne. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
Thanks for the invite.
You're welcome. This is the 50-year-old plus from 1968, 1080 Radio, KYMN AM, and...
Real Radio, True Variety, 95.1, The One.